Lesson one of security is a Rigelian tiger pounces with no warning. Lesson two of security is there are no breaks in security because threats never take breaks. And lesson number seven is, well. Hey, everybody, welcome to the seventh rule of Ciroc Lofton.
Hello, hello. How's it going?
My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we're doing a review of Strange New Worlds, Season 1, Episode 6, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, written by Robin Wasserman and Bill Wolkoff, directed by Andy Armaganian. And what do you know, we have a very special guest today. How are you doing today, Bill Wolkoff?
Hi, Ryan. Hi, Ciroc. I am thrilled to be here. Holy cow. I think I was about to say this was the first podcast I have done, but this is actually the second Trek podcast I have done. But I am excited to be doing this one. This is the first time I've done your podcast. So hello.
Welcome. Can we give a shout out to the first podcast? What was the first one?
It was What's Up Fandom. That Josh Kane hosts, and he interviewed me about Ghosts of Elyria a couple of weeks ago. So, awesome. But it feels like it. It still feels like this is the first one. I don't know why.
It's your first time with Ciroc Lofton, by the way.
Oh my God. If you had told me that in college that I would be on a podcast, hosted by Jake Sisko, I would not have believed it. So I'm very excited.
Thank you. You're part of the family now, Bill. So we're excited to have you, and we're loving this new show. It's kind of gotten off with a really great response, and I feel like it's hit the ground running, and people have been, the anticipation is so high. So excited to get into it and talk about some of your concepts for these episodes.
Thank you.
We have so much to talk about, Ciroc. I really don't know where to start, but let's just start with the fact that Bill here is not just the writer of two episodes. He's also the supervising producer of all of the episodes. I did not know that until yesterday, Bill. That's pretty important. That's pretty awesome. And how do you enjoy that? Is that the most stressful thing ever or the most fun thing ever?
It's both, of course. It's the most fun thing. It's the good kind of stress. It's a big job to have the responsibility to help shepherd this world. But for the dream of getting to shepherd something so amazing and as a supervising producer, I'm a part of a team of many producers, several writer producers. I'm specifically a writer producer, I'm supported by other great minds that are also out here, shepherding the show. Usually the way it's been working is we've been, the writer of the episode comes out to produce their episode. The show has been really good about that. And even when we were doing season one episodes, we covered our episodes, remotely, there's a new technology called Q-Take where you get, the quad on your laptop. So we were in Los Angeles. We couldn't there were a couple of season one episodes that were shot in the height of COVID that we couldn't fly out for. And I was in my home office, following along with texting the director, as the episodes were being shot.
So your home is Video Village.
My home was Video Village.
Wow.
It was a little challenging when there would be a 7 a.m. call time on the East Coast, and I was in L.A., and that translated to 4 a.m. That was a very early call time for a writer.
Tell me about it. This new show is seems like it's taking the traditional approach, like an old school approach to Star Trek storytelling. And that's one of the things that jumps out at me as far as it's separating itself from the other new live shows like Discovery and Picard. I feel like this is more of a traditional approach to storytelling, Star Trek style way, in that each episode kind of feels like it's giving you the beginning and ending a little bit of that story. Tell me about what your guys' approach is to kind of making these episodes and how you try to differentiate yourself from the other shows.
Well, since the very beginning, that was the format choice for the show was to embrace what the original series and Next Generation did in having more of an episodic format than a serialized format. There is light serialization in our show, but it is a show that you could come in at episode, you know, 5 and you would still get a complete episode that you'd be able to follow. What it empowers us to do is really embrace different genres within the sci-fi almost Twilight Zone style aesthetic of Star Trek, that's the beauty of the original series and TNG is how many genres you could explore. It's harder to do that when a show is serialized and in you're following one story. It's you can do that to an extent, but you can't really reset like we're able to do each week. It's been this welcome freedom, and it really lets us push deeper into different types of genres each week, and it's very exciting for me to get to do that.
God, there's so much stuff to talk about. Even in your answers, there are like 5 things that I want to jump on. One thing is, I'm so glad you mentioned the Next Generation and the original series, because we all assumed, and by we all, I'm speaking on behalf of all the Star Trek nerds, even though that's really impossible to do, but I'm going to try it anyway. Everybody basically assumed this would be more like the original series. By the 3rd or 4th episode, somebody in the Twitterverse, I don't remember who, just kind of surmised, wait a second, this is kind of feels like the Next Generation more to me. And then I kind of started jumping on that bandwagon being like, yeah, you know what? This kind of does feel a lot like the Next Generation, but maybe with Captain Kirk, or maybe with L, you know. And then people are like going back and forth, you know, TOS, TNG, you know. And so it's so gratifying to hear you actually mention that those seem to be the two that are inspiring you and the show. Was that just kind of a deliberate thing where you guys said, we want it to be part TNG, part TOS, and then secondarily everything else, all the other series?
Well, really, in terms of the episodic feel of it, everybody in the writer's room we're all Trek fans, and everybody has their own different relationship with Trek. There's some of us, and I've seen almost everything, and yet my knowledge is, I would say, I'm like, not even the biggest Trek card holder, and not by a long shot in our writer's room. So we didn't necessarily come in saying, oh, we're going to do Next Generation, but we were very much inspired by how many genres Next Generation was able to really embrace. And you know, Deep Space Nine also did that as well, but Deep Space Nine got into longer serialized arcs. And we really tried to keep an eye on what the entire series has done, I should say. And we have writers in our writer's room who have seen literally everything and know every single minutia. So when we talk about episodes, other episodes, especially in original series and Next Gen, but also in Voyager and Deep Space Nine, and even Enterprise as well, get brought up So it's, it is a comment on the we're cognizant of the entire franchise, but very deliberately doing doing something that's episodic. And I'll say one other quick thing about that. In the 60s, the tendency for episodic was to completely reset at the end of an episode, because characters still go through changes, but that, and that was more that was more like a symptom of television in general at that time, never really acknowledging what would happen week to week. We do acknowledge that. And as case in point, in episode four of Memento Mori, the Enterprise gets handed to hell by a black hole and Gorn destroyer ships. And then in episode five, in Spock Amok, it's under repair, but it's a completely new episode. And if you hadn't seen that, you know, you could still enjoy, if you hadn't seen four, you could still enjoy five just as well. We don't forget everything that happened before. It's just not the Netflix type cliffhanger where you watch one and immediately have to binge the next one.
Yeah. Right. You said light serialization, which is like, you know, carrying certain things over, but not making that the whole story arc. It's, you know, remember Uhura knows linguistics or something to that effect. And so then you get that carried on into, for example, in this episode, so you mentioned Twilight Zone, and I love Twilight Zone. I always tell Ryan that it's my favorite show because of, you know, Rod Serling's genius, the original Twilight Zone. And so when I watched this last episode, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, and even the last one, the Illyria episode, episode three, there are themes in there that remind me of Twilight Zone, like, you know, for example, these plasma organisms that couldn't be detected, and everybody's looking for that light and trying to get as much as they can. That's a concept that's Twilight Zone-ish to me, and I like the science behind it. And as well in this one, you know, child sacrifice and that the whole idea of that. Tell us a little bit about the origins of these kinds of concepts and how it goes from a seed to you incorporating these characters involved in the story.
Well, like Twilight Zone, Twilight Zone would take a look at our world and twist that in a way that makes it hyper real, but it's still commenting on our world and what's happening in our world. And that allows us to tell stories about us in a very hyper real way. We've looked for ways to do that in the series. And I think both Ghosts of Illyria and Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach are both examples of that. I'll talk about Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach first. I mean, it starts as a romance, and it is very much a romance. It's a romance thriller. But when you explore the world that Pike's romantic interest comes from, that's when you see the Twilight Zone twist. It's this seeming beautiful utopia that exists in clouds above this planet that it, you know, is just lakes of lava and acid right above it. But these people are incredibly happy, and they have this holy spiritual leader, the first servant. You might be asking the question as you're watching the episode, how is this world possible? How does it even exist? The price that that everybody in this world pays in order to have this world, that's the Twilight Zone twist. And that was that was where we, you know, started with this episode. It was I believe Akiva Goldsman, who is our one of our showrunners, Henry Myers and Akiva Goldsman are the two showrunners. He came into the writer's room talking about wanting to explore a utopia with a holy child that has at the center of it, that has a very dark secret behind it, as a way to look at ourselves. We discussed that was our springboard in the writer's room. And we realized, oh, this is also an interesting way to get into a romance. We knew we wanted to tell a romance story with Captain Pike this season. The two genres seem to lend each other well with the hard look at our own world and our own priorities that we did with the world of Majalis, the floating city.
Mm-hmm. You know, I also wanted to just real quick talk a little bit more about serialization, because we're kind of touching on it, but what I noticed and what Serac and I kind of discussed a week or two ago, I don't remember exactly which episode it was. But when you are saying previously on Strange New Worlds, I remember when that first happened, I found it a little odd. I'm like, well, it's episodic. It's not serialized. So why would we need a previously? But then it turns out these are all character arcs. All of the serialization to me seems like it's character driven. So they're not saying previously, you know, whatever, this ship came and blew something up. They're saying this character had this realization and these two characters worked together on something like that. So it feels like that way, yes, the episode has a beginning, middle, and end, but the character growth continues through every episode. And I feel like that's where the serialization is. Now, of course, except for episodes 3 and 6, we do have the Dr. Mbenga story with his daughter. That's actually a storyline that is continued over, and that's already probably my favorite storyline, honestly.
I think so. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, because I do like the development of Benga's character and this daughter that he's keeping. I think it's beautiful. And you also went back to it in this episode. Tell us a little bit about that.
When we were breaking episode 3, we were looking for an interesting spin on Dr. Mbenga. And one of the, you know, we didn't know much about him. I mean, there's not much that's established about him in the original series, other than he was no longer the chief medical officer by the time McCoy came in, and he knows about Vulcan physiology. So that left a wide open door for a way to explore this character. Ghost of Illyria is an episode about secrets. So that's kind of the jumping off point for Dr. Mbenga's story. And I felt very lucky to get to write it. And I can't remember if it was me specifically who brought in his daughter, but when we were writing that, it became very personal to me. A cousin of mine died very young, a couple years ago, just before I started. She was 26 years old, and she had mast cell carcinoma. I just saw her, you know, her father go, like, have to lose a 26-year-old, bright, you know, like, full of potential. And I thought that it would be nice to bring shades of that into Dr. Mbenga, and that was once I was in the outlining stage with Akela, and the script writing stage. That's something I talked about with her, and something that we brought into the script. And then in the writer's room, we really took off with it, and I got fortunate to get to continue that story in episode 6, and that was just happenstance. It wasn't because I'd started it in 3. That was more Henry and Akiva have a certain wisdom to who they assign to each episode. And it might have been they thought, oh, since Bill was on episode 3, maybe we'll put him on 6 where he can continue that story. But it was either way, for whatever reason that decision was made, I was thrilled to get to explore that even more have a B story in which Dr. Mbanga gets to also experience this world that is a utopia and is perfect and might hold the secret that he needs to cure this incurable space cancer. So that was the origin of that, of Dr. Mbanga's story. And I'll say one other thing. Oh, Signokimia. Yeah, that's the name of it. Signokimia.
Yeah.
Signokimia. And I'll say one other thing is just that Babs Olusanmokun, who plays Dr. Mbanga, just brought such depth and humanity to the scenes that everybody in the writers' room just wanted to keep writing those stories. So Signokimia is the name of the disease.
You know, I had to write that down. There's no way I'm going to remember that. Sorry. What were you saying, Sirach?
No, I love his performance as Dr. Mbanga. I think he's so compassionate. He shows, you know, so much care, and I think he wears his heart on his sleeve. So I love his character. And great storyline for him to have this issue that he's been hiding with his daughter. I really love that. But yeah, you know, it's funny. So when I'm watching some of these episodes, Bill, I think to myself, when something's good, it reminds me of something else good that I like. Right. And so when I was watching this last episode, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, there was a moment there where I was reminded of an old Eddie Murphy movie called The Golden Child, where he was having to save this little special boy who was supposed to be like the next Buddha or something. But the story reminded me, just for brief, not the whole story, but the idea of the child, the special chosen child. And then when I was watching the Ghost of Valyria, I was thinking, when the spirits and the stuff, I was thinking of Indiana Jones and Poltergeist. So I like that when I watch these episodes, certain things trigger in my head and make me, and it kind of touches a nerve of old school, you know, television movies, something that I grew up on, Twilight Zone, all of those kinds of things, and original Star Trek, like you mentioned. So I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. I wanted to give you credit for that. But my question to you was... I wanted to give you the credit because you guys are doing awesome. My question for you is about Pike's love interest. And I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but is he involved with the casting? Because I've had conversation with different actors about their love interest in the shows, and they had not always been involved with the choosing process. And I wondered if that was the case in this particular one. There seemed to be a chemistry between Pike and this woman,
Lindy Allura. Booth,
right?
Yeah, Allura is her character, Lindy Booth. I don't think Anson weighed in on the casting of Lindy, and I could be mistaken on that, but I'm pretty sure he didn't. It was one of the earlier decisions that Henry and Akiva really have the big say in casting. And they involve the writers of the episodes too. So Robin and I did, you know, get to weigh in on our thoughts too. And Lindy was, you know, the clear choice for several reasons. Just seeing her up with, like, feeling like this is somebody who could have had a history with Captain Pike, and her performance was just the best out of the reads. So we were, you know, very happy with Lindy's casting, and by weird coincidence, or I don't know if it's a weird coincidence, I mean, sometimes the actor community is small. It turned out Lindy and Rebecca are good friends.
Oh, cool.
That was just made a nicer, happier set that they, you know, like when two old friends get reunited on set. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Just the different two friends than we expected in the script from the script, but
yeah.
Right.
Well, that's really cool. That's good to know. Quick question. Majalis, is that anything like Terry Metalis? Was that taken from, inspired by, you know, anything like that?
I'm dying to say yes, only because, but it would be great. I could say yes. It would be great if it was Metalis who inspired Majalis. A Majalis is a kind of a poisonous flower. And that was the origin of the name. I was like, oh, that's, and it sounded like it could be a planet name. That's where that came from.
That is a perfect name then. That's very descriptive. That works very, very well. Yeah.
Davey, one of our other, our co-executive producer, made fun of me for that name and kept calling it Michelob when we were in the writer's room. Planet Michelob.
Maybe
Planet Michelob didn't stick.
Wow.
Yeah. I also wrote down here that Pike gets some nookie in this episode because, you know, there's always got to be, you know, the captain gets some action. And so there was a little action in this episode.
Very Kirk it of took, him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, that's a throwback. But, you know, I also have a question. And, you know, this is something that Ryan and I, because we've gotten into the show so quickly and it kind of really hit the ground running. And because you had characters that we were familiar with already, with, you know, Spock's character and Uhura, and, you know, we kind of know them a little bit. So watching them unfold is familiar. The thing that we, you know, right away, I think three or four episodes into this, reviewing this show, I was like, I want to know what Ortega's story is. What's Ortega's story? Now, I don't expect you to tell me what you guys have planned for revealing it, but I was confident
that we will find out more sometime in the first season, because I feel like they're being very fair and calculated with give a little bit here, give balancing a little bit there, which is just the best thing in the world for Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
We are so lucky to have such an amazing performer in Melissa Navia, who plays Ortegas on Twitter. Mortegas has started trending.
And
I
nice.
Am totally, I am completely team Mortegas. She is, I mean, it's a testament to her that we have yet to fully explore her, and already the humanity that she brings to that character is coming through so effusively that fans are already feeling that and responding to that. And I couldn't be more excited. There's going to be more take us.
Okay.
That's all I could say.
Yes. Good.
Wow. You know, sorry, go ahead, Sarah.
No, I was going to rat you out, Ryan, and say that Ryan is also, has a crush on the Hammer character. He really likes that character.
Kyle and Lieutenant Kyle too. Lieutenant Kyle, man. I was not expecting to like the transporter chief, you know, number 11 on the call sheet or whatever. You know, I was just like, who is this guy? This guy's got grit. Yeah. I like, and then you guys gave him a scene outside of the transporter room. Finally, I was so excited, but this is the first time. And by the way, we have not properly expressed today how much we're loving this first episode. So please know that we were extremely impressed from day one with this new series and this new show. Very, very excited, pleased, and enjoying it so much. This is the first time that in a first episode, I was immediately intrigued and excited about all top 9 characters. just every one of them had, even if they had just a tiny introduction, like Hammer showing up at the very end, this is the first time that everybody was at a 10 for me. And, you know, usually you get a couple favorites and then others kind of develop differently. I don't know how you pulled it off. I don't know if it was just having just very clearly defined and different characters. They're all very different from one another. I don't know exactly what it was, but you found the right recipe for this.
Well, I'll credit Akiva and Alex Kurtzman for that. This show was made slightly differently than sometimes shows like this get made, where we filmed the pilot first, but we weren't like racing air dates. So like a lot of times when you film a pilot, then you start filming, you know, the series, but like it's airing and you're racing after them. We had space in between. And when at the end, towards the end of season one, we had gotten to know all these characters so well, and they found their characters so beautifully. Akiva and Alex said, let's redo a scene in the middle. And now that we know them even better than we did, so part of the pilot was actually shot towards the end of season one.
Oh, wow.
So that way, because we knew the characters so well. Nice. And they found them so beautifully. And then, you know, it's, but you can't do that in most television. Because by the time, you know, you're at the end of your season one, the beginning has already aired. We kind of got lucky there. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the wisdom of the Akiva Goldsmans and Alex Kurtzmans of the world. And I should give Henry credit for that too, because he certainly made that happen too.
Wow. That is brilliant. So you are actually able to do something that most writers have to wait till the second season of, like, adjusting the characters. You were able to infuse it into the very first episode, which is why so perfectly fleshed out. Wow. We've only got
A little peek inside. I was just going to say that's like a little peek inside how the sausage gets made.
Love it. You know. Brilliant.
No, I had another question, but if we're short on time, my question, you know, one of the things that we always kind of wonder about when we're reviewing episode is where the script ends and the performance begins. Yeah. And that's one of the things I want to ask you, Bill. When you're writing these episodes, you know, you write the script, you send it in, and then you watch the performance. And I assume that Anson Mount, you know, playing Pike's character, does so many subtle nuances, but, you know, who's the person that surprises you with what they take from the words and kind of alter in their performance by either expressing it in a different way or adding something that you didn't really write?
I think all of our cast brings things that we don't always expect to the scenes once we're on the stage. Anson is, we're so lucky. I mean, he's incredible. And he's also, I mean, he's like the captain on our set. Like he brings that lead, the energy of leadership onto the set.
There's moments where he'll have a facial expression, and you know, Ryan and I will look at each other like that. That's not in the script. You know,
he's telling the story with one smirk right
now.
Yeah,
you're right. Like, I mean, he is the kind and amazing actors can find those moments. And it's still the script, but they're finding, you know, the they're living in those moments, and they bring them and he knows how to bring them to life, and he knows how to
he likes to roll his eyes like, yeah, okay.
He's I love those moments.
Well, Bill, this has been so cool. We know you're on set, we know you're in the middle of working and making movie magic everywhere, television magic. You've also done Star Wars Rebels and G.I. Joe stuff. I had no idea You have the dream job. This is incredible. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you guys are aware, and it seems like you are, of how much the Star Trek fan base is happy about this first season so far, and how much they are enveloping their arms around it and saying, I love this new show so much. It seems like you're aware of it, right?
I think they are enjoying it. That's the impression that I'm getting.
Yeah, we are.
Job well done, and huge congratulations. I hope you are seeing all of the adulation that people are putting out there, because you deserve to see it and hear it.
Thank you.
And we'll let you go with that. Everybody at home, stick around for the next half of this review. But until then, be sure to find Bill on Twitter and be like, oh my God, I love the stuff you're writing. You guys are just the best. Or just like his tweets.
I need more followers.
Yeah. Make sure you tune in and watch the show.
Yeah. And watch the show.
Just enjoy it like everybody else. Yeah.
More importantly, watch the show.
Exactly.
Yeah. Subscribe to Paramount Plus if you haven't already. Check out the show and watch it 1,000 times, because these are very rewatchable. When a show is not serialized, you can just rewatch any episode you want as many times as you'd like. But thank you so much for joining us, Bill. This has been awesome. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Zarak. Thank you, Ryan. It's been a lot of fun on my second podcast that I've done since I've started writing for the show.
That was kind of Kirk-esque in that delivery right there. Anyway, thanks very much. And everybody at home, stick around. We'll be right back on The Seventh Rule.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Sarak Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. We are doing a review of Strange New World Season 1, Episode 6, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. That was Bill Wolkoff that just left us. Really, really cool guy. So good to meet him. Sarak, it's so awesome to know that every person we talk to that's affiliated with this new series or with any of the new Star Trek series seem to be huge Star Trek fans, seem to be super excited to do it, seemed like they know more about Star Trek than we do somehow. but it's really great to see.
Yeah. He was a very, very good guy. Gave us a lot of insight on kind of the thought process and what the mechanisms behind the scenes are thinking about, and which was in alignment with what we see on screen, which is, you know, these really good episodes that are developing characters and have isolated storylines per episode. So I think they've got a good formula for success.
Also, we've got time right now, so let's go over the trivioids of the week, everybody. Boy, oh boy, what fun is this going to be? Here we go. You know me. I wrote down all the lessons. Lesson one of a security officer, or lesson one of security. A Rigelian tiger pounces with no warning. Lesson two of security. There are no breaks in security because threats never take a break. Lesson three of security. Let your tricorder do the investigating. Lesson six. Learn when to bend the rules. Lesson seven, we found out eventually, no spoilers, but it is leave no stone unturned. Also, when a pulsar nearly kills you, you tend not to forget. Don't call Pike's uniform yellow when it's obviously technically gold. And Mbenga reads the same chapter twice. in a row. And Lieutenant Kirk, lastly, is conflict averse. So we had a little Lieutenant Kirk sighting.
Yeah.
Just a second.
Yeah. I think he thinned down that mustache. I think it was a little bit too big.
Did he? I didn't notice
that. It looked a little thinned down. I was like, yeah, because the first one was 270s.
What did Tom it make Selleck. You think? Well, yeah, Tom Selleck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Magnum PI when I saw that the first time.
Not
this time
that
they toned it down.
Yeah. So it thinned. I got to check that out. So he was more like, he was less 70s and more French waiter is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I felt. I think somebody was like, yo, take that down a notch.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Am I the only one that thought, and maybe I am, that I thought we were going to possibly get a moment in which that kid, the first servant kid, helped or figured out a way with his father to heal or save Mbenga's daughter, and then she would no longer be stuck in the transport, but would actually be his real life daughter that he could share home life scenes with and all this. I don't know if you felt that same way, but I actually found myself already hoping for this, like so soon already really rooting for something to happen. And it's not like it's been four seasons and you're like, when is it, you know, are we going to get to see it? It was like already. Did you feel that at all?
I did. I felt it. Like, actually, the thought, they walk you into the thought, right? So yeah. Mbenga's like, so what's the technology? And he's like, yes, it's this microatomic or subatomic level of healing. And so once he starts explaining that to you, your own, as you know, the viewer, I'm thinking, well, couldn't that be used to help his daughter and cure? Like, before he says it, right? Because he doesn't actually come out and say it right away. He's thinking it, but you're thinking it too as the viewer, right? So I was like, wow, that could be used to help his daughter. That would be great. Mm-hmm. And then as I thought that, I was thinking, I don't think this show would like to have a little kid running around the whole bridge every episode. That's just not going to work for this.
Next Generation issue. Did it. And Picard hated it. He hated it, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I thought I thought I wouldn't want to see a kid either running around, and it would just be too much. So what I thought was the opposite. I thought the chosen one, the golden child, the first servant kid, I thought he was going to enter into the relay himself and join her in that state. And that space.
Interesting. Like when they were being transported and transported back, like maybe that, that would have been a pretty cool, this guy should write for the Twilight Zone over here. That's interesting. So he would then, like if that death actually happened or something, but he was able to save himself or someone was able to save themselves by transporting him in there, that would have been crazy.
Right. And then he would have told Mbenga that, don't worry, I'm going to keep your daughter company and I'm going to work on healing her in the program. And then they can kind of write that storyline away, and he can feel comfort that, you know, his daughter has a friend and there's this genius kid that's helping them both escape out of it at some point or another. So that's what I was going with it.
That's pretty interesting. See, I was thinking more like, it would just be fun, kind of like with the Siskos. You get their home life every once in a while. I would want to see Mbenga come home to his daughter and how that relationship now grows, because he doesn't have to just read her a chapter every week. He could read her a chapter every night now or something like that. You know, there could have been more to that. But, you know, of course, neither one of us got what we thought might happen. And instead, they're keeping that storyline going, which obviously is probably the right call, because writers always know that you can't give the viewers what they want. You have to give them what they need. We think we want a solution, but really we don't, because if you get a solution, then that storyline's over, you know? And like if two characters, you want them to come together, but they keep them apart. And that's what makes the story so interesting.
Yeah. That's why I don't think you materialize her. there could be an episode in the future where she might save the entire ship, right?
Right.
That, like, everybody's dead, everybody are incapacitated.
And she just pops up and she's like, what happened over here? She just starts kind of sneaking around. You're right.
Right? They're like, oh, find a way to activate the program. How we're going to hack it to the computer. It'll give her 5 minutes. She'll only be around for 5 minutes. Then she'll go back into the program. So then she finds a way and they're like talking her through. And daddy, what do I do? Open the panel, crawl in here, do this, you know? So she might save the day one day. So I think you keep her in that buffer zone a little bit and you don't materialize her.
Mm-hmm. So we also got to see a little bit of Lieutenant Kyle for just a second. That was
like, I swear.
this episode felt a little bit more original series to me. Like when Pike and the lady, I forgot her name, but when
Alora,
right? When Pike and Alora were on the planet. And they're chasing after the guy and Pike headbutts a guy and knocks another guy. I'm like, that is so Kirk, dude. You know, and like, and even the setting of a place with fountains and beauty and all that, that also felt very original series to me. So I keep teetering between like original series and Next Generation. This one felt more original series, especially with the fact that, you know, Pike gets the girl, you know, like Kirk gets the girl in like the 19th minute or whatever it was.
But it was a rekindle, so it's not right. Straight from scratch.
Easy because like we talk about, it's almost impossible to convince us that somebody
falls in love.
They fall in love in 30 minutes or whatever. But this way, they already had a thing. That works so much better. It flows naturally. We get it. Super easy.
You know, it's interesting that Bill said that the character of Alora and Rebecca Romijn knew each other.
Yeah.
And it's when he said that, in hindsight, as I was replaying the scene of her arriving on the ship, I thought that Rebecca Una's character would be more jealous of this woman just popping up talking about, hey, Pike, what's up? Remember that?
Yeah. Protective. Right? Yeah.
More protective, jealous, suspicious, like, and maybe inquisitive, like, oh, who the hell is that? I don't know what's going on, you know, like a little bit of jealousy. And I didn't see as much as I should, as I expected to see. And so when he says that they knew each other as actresses or as friends, and that it made us, oh, okay, so that's why she didn't go on her so hard. She already knows this woman. They work together. They've had a friendship. Because if that was somebody who was just a guest star that she didn't know at all, she probably would have looked at her like, what the hell are you doing here?
Right? Interesting. Yeah. And another thing, I don't know why that reminded me of this, because it's a completely different subject, but is the two kids, when the little girl was showing the boy the hopscotch game, right? You saw the little hopscotch. Our associate producer, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, was nearly adamant that there's some kind of connection to that and Alan Moraine on Deep Space Nine, if you remember Alan Moraine. It's to the point where I actually had to go back and check, because I didn't make that connection. But I was like, okay, it's pretty close. It's pretty close. So maybe there's something there. But I did see the circles were in a hopscotch thing. But man, how funny would that have been if she was actually saying, Alan Moraine, count to three, or whatever. The internet would have lost it. We would have gone nuts.
They could have jumped on that. That was an opportunity there.
That would have been hilarious.
But yes, I did also take note of the hopscotch thing. I thought that was a cool idea, concept wise. It made it playful. It made it kid related. And then they actually put some kind of science behind it, because the kid's like, yeah, I just used the noble gases from
no big deal.
So I thought that was really cool. It was a really nice twist. But I did not think of the DS9 connection at that moment.
That would have been hysterical, though. I'm telling you, the internet would have exploded and all the memes would have popped up. pretty crazy.
You know, La'an's delivery is really good at the cold-blooded delivery, right? Like the almost colder than a Vulcan. She seems even colder than Spock when Spock's being cold. She can just like really cut you with her eyes and her language. But she hit Uhura in this episode with like, so what'd you come up with? And Uhura's like, I just cross-analyzed. And she's like, so you did less than what I asked.
Yeah, the bare minimum. That's what I'm like. Yeah.
When she said that, I thought, well, this girl, wait, I would not want her being my supervisor.
You know, she's got the delivery of when you ask her a question, the delivery of her answer is making you regret asking the question, you know, like it's making you go like, oh boy, I really stepped in it now. I should have just not even asked, you know, like to where she's cutting you down just in the tone of her answer. And there's so much that can be done with that, you know, from a writer's point of view, because then the comedy writes itself in those kinds of cases, right? But then also you have the character growth that is possible when you have somebody that's so far on this extreme, they can also grow. Like for a character like Odo, who was just tough as nails, no laughter, no fun. And so there was great comedy with him and Quark because he's such an extreme case of a character, and Quark is kind of the opposite. But then it also opened the door for Odo to have so much growth as a character with Major Kira and, you know, meeting his homeworld and things like that. So that's going to be a really interesting arc for her character, I believe, especially if they're able to do 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons. I think she's going to have possibly the most growth out of any of the characters.
And I would like to see her have a Quark kind of person to bounce off of, like how Odo had a Quark.
Yeah.
So they had that two-man combo of comedy. And
do
I
you think it's
that-
Una?
I don't think it's Una, because Una and her post are projecting the same, like projecting authority, projecting knowledge. I think it has to be Ortega's. And I think they would have a real good, like Ortega's is light, you know, she's lighthearted. Absolutely. She's like, what do you mean? Come on.
Very yin and yang.
Right. And she's strict by the book. So they're like they could be the odd couple of the ship, you know, like, what do you mean? And like, Ortega's like, come on, I just, you know, I just patched it together. It's just like, it'll work. She's like, no, I need it to be like this, this, and this, you know, and the Odo Quark type of dynamic could emerge from that.
And there's another character that's like that. And he's pretty much the least used so far. And that's Hemmer. Hemmer is also very, you know, rigid, but in a different way, you know, because remember, he still was razzing Uhura. So he still kind of has his own fun in his own way.
And he has the Quark level smart comebacks for people, right? Because Quark was really smart with his comebacks, right? He he gets stung, but he'd sting you right back.
Yeah.
So Hemmer could do that.
Interesting. Yeah, it's really fun to see where the characters are going to go. I can't believe there's only 4 episodes left already in this season. That's it. After this one, there are 4 episodes left. So then we've got to wait another who knows how long for the second season. But I'm already sad that it's more than halfway over. I'm already like, wait, but I need more Hemmer.
Yeah, this show's getting off to a good start. I think their formula is working. You know, he did say a lot of the things that we kind of thought when we talked about Twilight Zone and start the original series and Next Generation. I think they're pulling some of the better elements out of those. They obviously have a captain who's qualified to give them that drama and a little bit of comedy, that little touch of comedy that lightens it up a little bit sometimes. Which we just discussed. Those are some of the things that he just throws into the character and makes it his own with his facial expressions and his, you know, just his delivery in general sometimes. So this show's hit the ground running. I'm enjoying it. And the adventures are great. As long as they continue to go with these kinds of adventures where they're trying to tell stories about the human condition in our own time, but frame it in the future and frame it under different, you know, scenarios, then I'm on board. That's the kind of Star Trek I like to watch. I like to see this. And this episode dealt with, for me, child sacrifice. And, you know, this is an ancient kind of theme. This is a biblical theme. You know, with Abraham taking his child to the mountaintop. So this is an ancient theme of child sacrifice and, you know, for the gods and whatnot. And I'm glad that they took it out of the context of what we normally see it in religion that we deal with and made it something else and made it alien. And then also have this kind of story behind it, like, what about your civilization and then how many children suffer over there? So there was a lot of kind of reflectiveness that Star Trek does when they try to tell these kinds of stories, like, hey, am I so bad? Cause you're throwing a stone at me, you know, when you,
however, ponder this,
right?
It's a mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah, really cool. Loving this series so far. And, you know, again, sometimes when I see the first episode of a series, especially like science fiction, I find myself saying, I'm not really convinced that I'm going to be attached to these characters. For example, when I saw the first episode of The Orville, way back in the day, you know, I remember thinking, is this going to work for me? You know, like, are these characters, I'm not really like fully attached or figuring out the characters in that first episode. Now, not to talk about The Orville, but eventually I definitely did. And they did just fine. But that happens all the time. In fact, more often than not for me. And this was the first one I feel like in a long time where in that first episode, I already knew, understood, and liked, and felt very comfortable understanding all of the characters in that first episode. And it's so cool that Bill kind of explained to us how they did that, because it really came through. Like, every character, we got a good feel for them, and we're already rooting for them. We know how they fit, and, you know, A plus from there, I'd say.
Yeah. They're keeping it going. They're doing, like he said, a light serialization. You can feel that, you know, with this Mbenga character. I like the light serialization. Mm-hmm. Also like the independent storylines where they're just one, you know, this is a one-off episode and you won't, you know, maybe you'll see the Gorn later on down the line, but this was the Gorn episode.
Sure hope so. This was the Gorn episode, right?
Right. And that's it. That's what you get. So I like it.
I hope that the Gorn end up becoming kind of like the big heavy of the series, you know, kind of like the pack leads of Lower Decks.
Or the Bajorans in DS9. And
yeah, the Borg in Voyage or whatever. Yeah. So that, I think it would be great if, like, you know, the, say like episode 10, the Gorn are like, they come in and they attack again or something, you know, they're like, that first episode, if that's just the first episode with the Gorn, then they have successfully built them up to where they're already a big heavy. They're already a problem. And we haven't even seen one yet. We've technically haven't even seen a Gorn yet. So they still have so much more that they can build up and work with. The first time we see one, somebody gets captured and brought to their ship, the Gorn invade, you know, whatever they want to do, they can really build it up. I don't know if they will, but I think it would be great if they did. It'd be a lot of fun. All right.
Yeah, they're giving us episodes that can go a lot of ways. I mean, we just had two different conclusions for this episode. You thought it was going to go one way. I thought it was going to go a different way.
And we were both wrong.
And then, as a matter of fact, at several times, I thought it was going to go a different way. There was another moment in this episode where I thought the father was working with the resistance group and trying to kill the kid himself.
Me too.
You know, so there was a point where I thought that too. I was like, wait a minute, don't trust this guy. He's part of the,
they got us guessing. They got us guessing. And I thought that the lady was basically, you know,
untrustworthy, right?
Hooking up with Pike to, in a way of kind of veiling things, you know, veiling sinister intentions. There's so many different ways that these episodes can go. And that's, that's what's great about it, is they drop in this element and that element and that element. And then it kind of just, you know, they slowly knit it together. But it can go in any direction. When you're halfway through the episode, it could go seven different directions and you don't know where it's going to go. Love that. Yeah. It's great. A lot of fun. All right. Let's put a close to this one and look forward to episode 7. And before we do that, let's give a very special thanks to Homer Frizzell out in Walter Koenig's former apartment building in New York, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel in Manhattan somewhere, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet.
Skip.
Tim Baum, a.k.a. Grandpa One, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor Arukin, Miss Darlena Marie, Titus Moeller, of course, Dr. Muhammad Noor, John Mann, Anna Post, Tierney C. Diekman, Rex A. Wood, Anil O. Palat, Erica Strom, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, Stephanie Baker, DQ, Neil Akasaka, and Justine Norton Kurtzen. Of course, everybody knows, don't forget, Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Wow.
Sweet.
That's our fun for the week, everybody.
And thank you to Bill for joining us and in doing this review with this episode and talking a little bit about the whole show and episode 3 and all his contributions. So it was very good to have him. Thank you.
Nothing cooler than finding out that the people that are making these great episodes are huge Star Trek fans. I mean, that's just makes it feel like, boy, we're in good hands. You know, it's just, it's a gratifying feeling. And yes, thank you very much, Bill, for joining us. It was awesome. We truly appreciate you taking the time in your very busy schedule. So thank you. Thank you. Great. I think that's it for us. So everybody at home, we will see you next time. Make sure to watch Strange New Worlds 1,000 times over. And until then, always remember the 7th rule.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Whoa, I got a little DJ skills in there. Welcome everybody to the free for all. We're going to be reviewing Strange New Worlds season 1, episode 6. And joining us today is Dr. Susan V. Gruner. And we also have Melissa Longo with the Who. We also have Stephanie Baker rocking an Abyssinian kiosk original with the beautiful colors, mint green action with the black. Lovely.
Nice.
Woo-hoo. Dr. Stephanie Baker. Lots of doctors.
Mike Goo's representing in the house from the near Boston area.
Hello.
He's also representing the Abyssinian kiosk with the Cisco Kid shirt.
Excellent.
Strike edition. And of course, who can ever forget the lovely Dr. Anne Marie Siegel
in the house. Hi.
I'm Sirach Lofton, and of course, we've got our host, Ryan T. Husk.
I forgot to wear my Abyssinian kiosk shirt today. Sorry, guys. I can get it. What are you wearing, Sue? You're wearing something big and red. Oh, I thought so. What is going on here? Her brand new executive producer shirt. It's a
ticket right there.
Isolinear chip. Looking great.
Yes.
Beautiful.
That is
beautiful.
The ticket.
All right. And I think Anne Marie's probably wearing Ferengi eyes, is my guess.
I love Ferengi eyes. I have like 7 of them. So I always wear them.
Very nice. All right. Well, let's have some fun, you guys. We just watched Strange New Worlds, brand new episode. This is kind of like a mid-season special, right? Even though it's episode 6, whatever. Sometimes people have mid-season stuff 60% of the way through. Melissa Longo, you loved this episode, obviously, but why?
I did really like this episode a lot, actually. The thing that I'm loving about Strange New Worlds is that it is constantly asking the questions, the moral and ethical and philosophical questions that we used to get back in Star Trek heyday, all the way from the original series to Enterprise. And I love that they're bringing these questions back. And
thank you for giving Enterprise love, by the way.
Oh, well, it deserves a lot of love.
It does.
and this episode was no exception. I liked that it brought somebody from Pike's past, so giving him a little backstory and, you know, asking a question. I like that there was scenes of intimacy because there's been romance seems to have been lost lately. I don't know. And I like romance. And then I like that there's moments of joking sprinkled in the seriousness. It's nice to have that levity. I liked that they paired Uhura and La'an, two very widely different characters, and brought them together and found a way to have them work together, even though it was difficult to get that going. And the kid I thought was incredible. It felt like he actually knew all of the scientific stuff that he was spouting out. It seemed to me that he knew what he was talking about. And I was like, ah, this kid's smart.
He had some pretty crazy lines, right? But he was delivering them as if he knew what the hell he was saying, because I didn't.
Yeah, I was like, wow. Okay, he is the chosen one. But overall, I really like the episode, and I really like the questions that it leaves us with, because there's not one solid, solution or there was a solution to the problem that was posed, but we might not agree with that solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Mike Gu, hey. You sent us all a message. Would you care to share?
Oh, I said finally.
Finally, I got some. But then Anne Marie said it's been 4 episodes. Did he get something in episode 2?
In episode 1. Okay. It's episode 1. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So 5 episodes.
But it has been too many. Too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor guy. Anyway.
4 episodes without.
So, Mike, what do you think about this episode? We're 6 episodes in. Do you think was it great? Did you have fun? Does it stand up to all the others or stack up to it?
Yeah, I think it was great. I think it stacks up quite well. I think it might have actually be my favorite so far. For every reason that Melissa said, it's good to see an episodic, sci-fi TV. Star Trek show that actually does like hard sci-fi. It asks those deep questions. Incidentally, just watching a Stargate SG-1 episode in season 3, and it had a very many parallels, because in this other show there were these children that were born with all these nanites, and they got all this knowledge, and then they basically were ceremoniously lobotomized, and all these nanites were given to everybody in the population. But yeah, I mean, it's quite a thing to found a civilization on that kind of like original sin. So yeah, that was probably my favorite, is that a story question.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really cool. It's a favorite episode already. That's good. How do you feel about it, Stephanie Baker? Top six episodes so far?
Yes, I would say it may be number two for me.
Wow.
I watched the Stargate episode with Mike. We watched it together. And so that was kind of cool that there was that parallel. I also thought it had a parallel with the book, The Fifth Season, which has children who have to control nodes and prevent earthquakes, and they get sacrificed. And I just thought that's a really interesting parallel that I noticed as well. Another sci-fi. And then one of the parts I like at the end was when Captain Pike got a drink, and he was drinking liquor. I actually looked up like what liquor other captains, what other drinks captains drink. And so like Sisko sometimes drinks Saurian brandy, but sometimes he drinks Aractogeno. And then Janeway drinks coffee. Picard drinks tea. Captain Archer, I think, drank iced tea. Does that sound right?
I don't remember if that was
a common theme.
Like breadsticks.
But I wasn't sure what drink Pike was drinking. Mike thought it was bourbon at the end. But I liked the fact that he was drinking alcohol, like that was a tough situation he went through, and he drank liquor.
Mm. I really want to know what he was drinking now. What made you think it was bourbon, Mike?
Oh, it was just a guess. I mean, I saw the color and just made a guess.
Yum. Sounds delicious. What alien race do you guys think makes the best bourbon? We know Saurians make the brandies and Romulans make the ale.
Joseph Sisko.
Yes.
But he got that moonshine.
Yeah. Good answer. But Anne-Marie, what did you think of this episode?
Oh my God, I loved it. It was so good. Like, the jokes are so cute. I'm obsessed with Dr. M'Benga. I love when that alien guy calls it an abattoir. So funny. Like, they just do like cute little one-liners, and it really incorporates like the best of Star Trek all in one episode. The kids were just phenomenal. I couldn't even get over that little boy. I'm so mad we probably won't see him again. Yeah, and it's just, I just love episodes where you see bits of everybody, and like, it is really nice to see like the intimate moments. And I love number one so much, and I know she isn't in the episode a ton, but like from the get-go, she's like kind of giving that girl, as she like transports in the third degree when she knows Pike is clearly like not thinking clearly. I love her so much. So yeah, totally amazing. And there are a lot of twists, and yeah, I just love it.
Do you think number one science feels the was same amazing about you?
Oh yeah. My headcanon is yes.
And when the two kids were playing secretly, what did it remind you of?
Oh, you know. I was like, Ella Moraine. Somebody come to the door.
Ella Moraine.
You said the science was amazing. Tell us a little bit about
the science. I just thought, like, I mean, it wasn't like, I love Strange New Worlds seems to be doing it so well, where they like go into detail, but they stop just before it gets like too fuzzy. And that reminds me a lot of 90s Trek. And I don't know. Every time somebody starts talking about things at quantum levels, I always like that. There's a lot of leeway there. And I love covalent bonds, peptide bonds. No, so anytime they mention that.
Peptide bonds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about
then, then you get to like,
talking about bonds.
Well, they're all great, but peptide is the one that was mentioned.
Yeah.
So I just, it's, yes.
What about the noble gas hopscotch?
Oh, that I was kind of like, huh, that's weird. Like, why not just get good old fashioned chalk? Like, you think it's a little too complicated.
Like they have it.
Yeah, but I think it's, they're doing a great, great job.
Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, what is chalk made out of?
Actually, I don't know. Isn't it some kind of like
isn't it just rock? Carbon?
Calcium carbonate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Stephanie Baker.
yeah, I don't know. I love it a ton. And every episode, we get such cute character moments. They're doing such a great job with that.
Well, Dr. Susan B. Gruner here knew the calcium carbonate thing, but being how nice she is, she's like, I'll let everybody else speak on it first. And just smile. I don't know if you did, thank you, Sue. What did you think of this episode?
I loved it. Yeah. This series for me is the best of all the new Treks by far. I'm totally in love with it. I just watched 7 years in Tibet, and I was thinking that they were going to go a Buddhist kind of route. So I was shocked at what they did. I loved it. I like the character development that they're doing, because I don't feel that's happening on some of the other series. Don't hate me, but that's just how I feel about it. And in this show, we're getting serious character development, interpersonal relationships. That's why I love Deep Space Nine. And that's why I like Strange New Worlds. I love the colors. I love everything about it. And it was a dark kind of episode, and it really made me think, but I loved it. I give it a 200 out of 100.
Wow.
They're doing it right. They're
that's like 50% more.
Yeah. It's the Trekkiest of all the new Trek. And I think Gene Roddenberry would really be proud of this iteration of Star Trek. It's really, really good.
Oh, and I do have to say too, like, sorry, really fast. The other thing was, since I'm watching TOS right now, it's just... they take like all, it does feel very TNG a lot of times, but they also really like hit on some of the like ways that TOS episodes are put together. And I love that about
like
it.
Like what, for those so of us well that aren't TOS
it's
experts.
It's kind of like this. I just watched one where like Kirk starts with a flirtation with a girl. I think it's like the conscience of the king. And like, as it progresses, the girl gets so much like darker and their twists. And I love that trajectory with like the romances aren't as like sunny as you think in the beginning.
Actually, you guys were talking about Pike's romances. He actually had two episodes with romances in a row, which was episode one and The Cage before that. So that's
oh my gosh, you're right.
Well, he is hot.
Yeah, where do I sign up to be a romance?
Can I also say that I really liked that they brought back the whole medieval looking alien planet. Like I felt like we were on Camelot or in Camelot, but in space. Camelot in space. And I kind of like that throwback to old Trek, how they're always, you know, the alien race is always some medieval town or, you know, place. And I was like, that's fun.
Maybe Game of Thrones, but they did such a good job with like, I love the map paintings, but they updated that a little bit so that it's like CGI and you see actually like three dimensions as they're flying in. And then also this isn't like something I feel like usually happens. They actually put in like very foreign exotic sounding music to like accompany that so that you really know you're on a different planet. And it's kind of dissonant. I loved it. Oh, so good.
Yeah, scoring's been amazing so far. But here's a pretty crazy question. Since this is a mid-season special, Mike Goo, do you have a couple characters that you consider to be your favorite so far or the most interesting to you? So far, 6 episodes in.
I like number one and La'an.
Mm-hmm. Good duo.
Yeah.
Okay. You like their, do you think they're kind of like a Laurel and Hardy mix, or are they more like Laurel and Laurel?
I don't know.
Or Abbott and Costello and Costello and Costello.
Man, use references from this century.
Who's on
man.
First?
References from this century, yes. All right. What about you, Melissa Longa? Do you have a couple that you think are the most intriguing or interesting so far to you?
Well, my favorite is La'an, and that is not, this has not been a secret, but I loved how her character has grown so far in this, the first six episodes. It's wonderful to see. Second favorite, it changes by episode. it's hard to choose because, yeah, it changes by episode. They all have such wonderful moments. Like in Manga, I love his dilemma with his daughter and how sweet he is to her when she's free from the confines of her, you know, stasis, whatever, wherever she is. I don't know the medical term or the science term, but those moments are so sweet, and I love that. And I love that every time he has an opportunity to learn how to cure or at least alleviate some of the pain that she's going through, then I like seeing that too. So I'm going to choose him today because, yeah.
What about you, doctor? Just kidding. I know the three doctors here. Dr. Stephanie Baker, what about you?
My favorite is La'an. I think that's a lot of people like La'an. I really like La'an's backstory. We have learned so much about her. And I just love her manner and how she is grates on people at times. And her rule, this last episode with all of her rules, that was yeah. That was funny, but kind of cool. And then my other favorite would be Spock. Spock was always my favorite in TOS. I like this. I like all Spocks, and I like this Spock. And I feel like we don't see him very much. You know, it feels like this episode, although he was really prominent in the last episode, of course. But yeah, I think it would be Spock.
Do you get a little bit of a rule of acquisition vibe when she was given the rule of security?
Leffler's laws.
Of what?
Like Leffler's laws from TNG. Mm. Like, you know,
yes, Leffler's. That's what it was. That is what I couldn't remember who. I felt like we'd been through rules before. I agree with you. It's Leffler's laws. Yeah. The game. Was that the game?
Yes. So good.
Well, and I liked when she said Mugatan breathing stone. You have to. I don't know. That was funny to me. So
it was funny. I know.
I laughed out loud by myself.
And now again amongst friends.
Yeah.
What about you, Sue? Let's predict what Sue's favorites are. Who Sue's favorites are. I think she definitely likes Pike, but she also likes La'an very much. And
Nurse Chapel.
That was actually my third guess. What do you guys think?
I'd say Nurse Chapel.
Survey says
Pike and one out of two.
Is it number definitely. One out of two?
Definitely Pike, yeah. And yes. The doctor.
Yeah.
I just
he's so cute.
I love the way he portrays that man with his daughter and the buffer. Heartbreaking. And Anson Mount, like I said, the guy, he's just so adorable. He's so cute.
Do you like his hair?
He's such a great captain. I think he's a very human
Yeah.
He's not, he doesn't seem so structured as you would assume some captains would be. And I like the way he plays the role.
You think he's a little more Kirk?
Did I mention he's cute?
He plays like Kirk. He's
right.
Very much yeah. Kirk.
Totally. Oh, yeah. And he does like the way missions all the time. Like, yeah. Since there's no Riker to tell him
that. He plays it like Kirk with the playfulness and the flirtatious and the comebacks, the little coy comebacks for people. She has a point there, that kind of stuff, you know?
But he's also very wise. He's got a lot of wisdom.
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah. It's a little bit like Janeway.
We know what's going to happen to him.
Janeway had a lot of Kirk in her for sure, but she also had the serious demeanor of like a Picard as well. I feel like she was kind of a blend in there for sure. But yeah, Pike definitely feels very Kirky to me. Very Kirky.
She does.
That's going to be a meme now. We may have to have a shirt.
Sue, you don't think of Eve when you see La'an?
I don't think of Eve?
Yeah.
Yeah, when I watch La'an, I think of Eve England.
That is a really good question. Yeah.
Every
looks a lot like her. Up,
I think of Eve England. I'm like, I like this character, and she reminds me of Eve. She almost has a similar accent, but it's not the same, but it's similar.
That what that means is next time you see Eve England in person, you're going to be a little intimidated, Sarok. You're going to be like, all right.
I like it. I think La'an is awesome. I like strong female leads. That's why I like Kira so much. That's why I like La'an so much. I think she is a very strong character, and it just resonates through the screen when I watch her. She's like, looks like she's a boss. And she doesn't play any games. And I like her, even when she does play games or is kind of playful, it's in an Odo type of way. You know, it's like, you know, like I got you, but I'm not going to laugh too much. But, you know. And so I like the back and forth, even with the her and Uhura. There were moments when, like, you couldn't tell where she was, like, trying to get Uhura in trouble or actually trying to challenge her or actually uplift her. At some point she was like, you present the findings and, you know, because you deserve the credit or something to that effect. But that seemed to me like your character building, and you're trying to build somebody when you make them go through those challenges and then you give them the opportunity to get the reward for their work, as opposed to that was all me. I'm the one that told you to do all that research and this and that. So I like that leadership style from La'an. And I also really like, nobody said Hemmer, but I think Hemmer is going to be a super good character coming up. I think he's just got comedy, and I like his delivery. He's really matter of fact and point blank. And I really like point blank kind of characters.
Mm.
And he's got a lot of intricacies to his character. Like he's definitely very fleshed out as a character. They just haven't given him yet an episode that spotlights him. So yeah, I think that he is going to be a fan favorite once we get a little bit more of him. All right, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel. We know Dr. Mbenga has got to be at the top. Who else is there?
He's so cute. And number one, and Nurse Chapel. Love her. And, you know, the other thing while Sarok was talking, I also was thinking while watching the episode, like, it somehow hits on, like, really amazing intricacies that are super subtle about different, like, subcultures within a working environment. And it's really cool seeing Uhura going, like, rotating to different areas. And, like, for example, when she started touching whatever that was she was touching, and La'an, like, yelled at her. But then last week or whatever week it was, Hemmer was yelling at her to touch things. And I'm like, it really it's like, it totally like captures like that subtlety of like, if you're rotating in the hospital or whatever, like one team will always say, you always have to do this. And another team will like twerk it a little. And it's just like the beauty of rotating is you get to learn all of that stuff. It's just, it, something about this show just really captures like so many everyday life things and really makes you feel like you're getting into the nitty gritty of what it's like to be working your way up on the ship, and not in a jokey way and not in just like a one episode Lower Decks episode. It's just, they're doing such a fabulous job. I love it.
Yeah. She's like, okay, wait, engineering, touch stuff. Security, don't touch stuff.
Oh, and she's, you can just tell how good Uhura is at her job, because like the no stones left unturned, she already knows that. Like, I love that. She's so great.
Mm-hmm. And what an amazing skill to have, to be so, such a great linguist. So be so proficient at so many mm-hmm. different languages and be able to decipher those codes, you know?
Yep.
Kyle also got a shout out in this episode when the transporter room.
Yep.
I think Pike said, "What the hell was that?" He's like, "It wasn't me, Captain. I wasn't me."
Yes. And then the other thing is that he's up there. The new girl, Jenna Mitchell.
I would say that.
Oh yeah, you love him.
Kyle and Mbenga are probably my two favorites right now. Kyle, we know nothing dark horse.
Well, that's why you're stealthily like labeling these videos Kyle appreciation post.
I almost wanted to call it the next one like something Kyle gets a job or something. Like, remember,
oh my God, get a room.
The next episode he actually got to play out in the corridor for once, and I was like, oh man,
yeah,
Kyle is taking over.
The other one that's really cool though is Jenna Mitchell on the bridge, because that's mm-hmm. another last name like Gary Mitchell, like right. They connected.
Yeah.
What's the meaning of that? Yeah.
There was also the communications officer that took over for Uhura, but I don't remember what his name was. And I just hope that they always reuse the same person that fills in for other people. So that way we get to know them too, because a lot of times in Star Trek, like the backup person is just somebody that's hired that one day and they just do the one, and then you never see them again. And we're like, no, we want to get to know the second person too, the one that, you know, fills in when they're gone.
I think they are when I stalk the credits. And then also the other thing that's going to help with that is that it was COVID while they were filming, and so they just can't keep getting in new people. Right. So I think we're in for a treat. Lieutenant J style.
Well, yeah, to have the core background that comes back every week. That feels more authentic, and it was nice to have an appearance of Kirk, the other Kirk. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that was so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
he's like the Dan of the ship.
Lieutenant Dan. What were you saying, Sirach?
No, I was going to say when we talked to Bill Volkoff about this episode and. You know, we expressed to him that we wanted to see more of Ortega's character backstory and some development, because I felt like she's always in the mix, but I don't see her getting enough story development. We're only seeing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And she's like getting, if once she's on a little bit more, she's dangerously close to being one of my top favorites. I love
Yeah. Her Ortegas and Hemmer are the two that we're all like, okay, we know it's coming. We know we're gonna get
on Twitter. She said she's coming up. Like her nieces watch every week, and they keep texting her to be like, "Why aren't you on the episode more?" And she keeps saying it's coming. Nice. She's a great Twitter follower.
What's her name? Melissa Navia.
Melissa Navia.
Yeah. Melissa, probably.
Maybe. Yeah, that was my guess. All right.
Well. And really fast, did you have Bill Volkoff share his Twitter handle earlier? Because he's a great Twitter follow.
Please share it with everybody now. Okay.
So it's @flying_lobster.
Flying underscore lobster.
Yes. And I also want to know what the meaning of that is. But yeah.
That was the B-side of the B-52s song.
Rock lobster.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Or as they say in Boston, lobster.
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 All right. Well, I think that's about it for us today. I think we hit all the points. You guys also mentioned that like the characters seem to be so well fleshed out, and we already have some favorites and some interests and want to know more. And Bill definitely shared with us a lot of points about how they were able to flesh out the characters so well. It's really cool. We really appreciate Bill joining us. It was freaking amazing. And we thank you for joining us, Sue, Melissa, Stephanie, Mike, and Anne-Marie. And I think that's about it for us this week, right, Srock?
That's about it. Just really quickly, once again, I would say that in this particular episode, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, I believe that the main theme for the plot is derived from the biblical story of Abraham taking his kid to sacrifice on the in Genesis. And I think that's where the essence of the story begins, and by taking it out of a context of you know, the Judeo-Christian way we look at things, it gives you another way to perceive. And that's what I think Strange New Worlds is doing a very good job of, like Melissa was talking about, taking these kinds of concepts and putting them in a perspective that allows us to question it differently or see it differently.
I love it when Srock takes us to school for a couple minutes. No, everybody gets quiet. We all just listen.
Yes. It's the best.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us, and keep watching Strange New Worlds. People are going nuts. There are so many long time Star Trek fans, people that have been watching for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, that are saying, this is my favorite show ever. I'm like, we're six episodes in, but they're convinced. That's it. It's official. By episode two, they're like, already, that's it. It's official. Janeway who? Kirk who? Nope, it's this one.
They've got a great captain. Anson Mount is a fantastic actor, and he's got a good grasp of that character right away.
All right. So everybody, thanks so much for joining us. We will see you next time. And until then, always remember. Oh, and by the way, everybody, go check us out on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. Give us a nice rating and a nice review, and we'll read it sometime somewhere during a recording, and you'll love it probably, hopefully. Thank y'all, and we'll see you again next time. Until then, always remember the seventh rule.